Thanks, Matt. And thanks for having me up here. It's just great to be here. And I have this wide variety of friends from different parts of my life. And then some students here, too. It's great. Thanks for coming. I'm going to read the I Am the Real Jesse James poem, which is kind of like a disco fury. And I'm going to read at the end, because it's exhausting for me to read in a good way. So I'm going to read a couple of poems from a new book called Mouse Oracle. And some of them are I was trying to pick some that are sound-based. Some are prose poems, and some have animals and marriage, marrying animals, which is a curious theme of mine. And one of them is a found poem, so I'll let you know. This first one is called Looking at Satan. It's a prose poem, kind of a fable. Looking at Satan. Since his fall, Satan hasn't known who he is anymore. Simple truths have become hidden. Kissing women, he thinks, will they taste like fruit or meat? When he kisses men, their lips feel like bread crust, their skin like unwashed sheets. For my sisters, screwing high school boys in the boathouse became a habit. They enjoyed the deviance, their skin that smelled like mildew and life jackets. If Satan was actually here on Earth, he would certainly not be my poor father, retreating after the fact to walled cities, selling painted roosters as luck charms in golf resorts. He would certainly not be the man at the party who grabbed my hand, saying softly, "This is difficult, but someone ought to tell you. In the past few months, you've gained a lot of weight." Looking at Satan, you can find no landing ground on his face. His left eye rolls towards the west while his nose slides into his cheek. He would certainly be a man, though, hairy, the way that flies can be hairy, with tight iridescent skin like the flies that infect horses or bots. Death-defyingly handsome and sickening, appearing perhaps in the form of a long-lost uncle. So beautiful, my sisters would collect the soda cans he slurped and the spoons he licked and make them into altars. They would shun the boathouse boys and practice kissing each other. So beautiful, my brothers would ground their speedboats on marshes, zoom their motorbikes off trails. At night, they would dream of bending over backwards and falling into him like a pool and wake up sweating. Even my father would devise transparent ways of keeping Satan up late in the parlor, trying to grasp his mutable yet irresistible countenance. Only my mother would know the truth and not be fooled. Unfortunately, she would have had such a rich history of useless homilies that when she spoke the truth about Satan, no one would listen. Years later, when her ranting actually came from the voice of an old woman, she would finally be heard to say, "The devil's in this house, and he's using us to remind him of himself." Then she would take all the mirrors down and bury them in the backfield. This next poem, my friend Doug asked me to read. It's a relatively new poem. I don't actually think I've ever read this poem out loud. It's premiere. Falling asleep while reading. Inside my chest, a city is building. I have fallen asleep while reading. Outwardly bird and glass habit, an airport inside, secretly terminal, and the long story of a hero walking to mountain caves to a stupa where a blue-haired woman cries, "Don't you recognize me?" I forget my place, forget who I'm talking to. The hero remembers, places the woman's foot on his head, says, "Please forgive me," as he remembers standing in front of the stupa circled by dogs. He realizes he's been dreaming. I lose my place. I forget the hero's dream and walk the electric walkways of the terminal, watching 1,000 atoms, all with the face of the Buddha, all with your face. We want to believe everything has its place, but this is a wrong way of seeing. I forget who I'm talking to. There's a bird caught in the terminal, its nest built of luggage scraps over gate 32A. Before the hero fell asleep, he remembered the face of the blue-haired woman, who was someone else entirely. He woke in a room filled with wind and birds, long tunnels of light. I wake with my hair thrown over my face, the dog jumping off the empty bed. Someone has delivered the mail, a magazine with the faces of poets lined like airplane windows. The hero wakes from his dream and flies home on the wings of two white vultures. It will be 21 years till he remembers the blue-haired woman again. Whole cities have passed between us, thousands and thousands of dreams and faces. I want to say forgive me. It's been 21 years since I've seen your face. I don't know my place anymore. I need to talk to you. It's getting into these kind of like elliptical poems that have what's called a closed image system, where the words keep getting recycled. And I'll read another one like that in a minute. It's, some people call it like a broken sestino or a broken villanelle, where it's not completely constrained to that form, but it's similar. This is a prose poem. In this book, there's a very subtle political poems about the president. President makes an appearance in this poem. State of the Union. No change noticed in the condition of the patient and long-suffering president, still ill from the accident, an irrepressible conflict with the insidious poison in his blood. In prison, you can drive two nails into wood, spaced one over each eye. Sharpened tips and weighted wood hang from top bunk, suspended by a cord. Dull senses with narcotics, opiates, or others lay down on the cot, light the cord on fire. Freedom is a consuming fire. You find it in piano wrists, in elastic vocal gymnastics, or whispers. You speak like a boy who thinks this old gnarled oak can become even more twisted. Never remind the audience that you breathe at all, Mr. President, is what they say. But what do you say when they speak of this yellow love, when you suck the corner of your finger, when you take off your dress? Please, make me an empty table. Hands and knees, long flat back, flip me and spread a Milky Way across my chest. These clothes I wear mean nothing. I have always loved this country. Here's a nasty little poem called Rabid Dog. After she had swallowed him completely, taste of soap chalk, ammonia, her mouth smelling like water, like a dog's mouth. She forgot the vows and how she got there. The stranger's coal eyes leading her to the broom closet and his hands festooned with rings. After all, her husband was a stray dog. In the yard, he carried a mirror on his back, his eyes flowering. He spent his days in the city snapping at bees, getting his nose stung. In the evening, he returned with a mouthful of fur. Sundays, she watched him in the garden swallowing sticks, his own arms, dragging his rear legs like a wedding gown. To him, daffodils were now a bouquet of knives. He snarled, shook his head, left, right, an impatient bride, tried to see himself in the mirror on his back, like the bride reaching behind herself for the last button. Finally, at the wedding reception, he politely leaned over and bit the wrist of a neighbor. She passed a tray of canapés, saying, "The best thing to do is take him out behind the barn and shoot him." A stutter of laughter, then doom, her bangs slipping back like tidal waves. Truth is, she had been his wife 2 hours when she chose a new lover. What was his name? In the cramped, dark, fumbling, smell of chlorine, an entire forest of brooms falling. When they were through, a bare bulb exposed the tiny room. He wore a beard, and in the janitor's sink, he washed his hands over and over again like a raccoon. This next poem I'm reading for my friend Kidder Smith. I wrote it after a long talk with our friend Songchen, and this is my response to different schools of Buddhist theories on emptiness. See if you can figure it out, Kidder. This is my response to it. It's called Animal Groom. It's one of those elliptical poems. Striped wood, stirred berries, and spoon collapsing into forehead light. This was my contemplation, interrupted by the bear. The bear bouldering into my cabin as I stirred dried berries at the stove, standing on my hind legs, stirring when the bear entered a wall of fur, standing on his hind legs. I was married to this bear. And so my husband entered with his bearskin cloak thrown over his eyes as his forehead touched mine, and the forehead of the bearskin touched mine, and I saw him for the first time. His forehead shined a flashlight into mine, luminous, even though I was shy and looking at the spoon. The bear and his bearskin made the cabin collapse, and I was married in his hair, then an arm, a spoon reaching through me to the cabin window, where the striped woods collapsed and left me without a bearskin of my own. I wore a striped mattress. The woods were filled with them. The bear said, "You call that a parka?" The bear said, Let's strip this mattress down to particles and contemplate that. Let's contemplate, said the bear, the idea of the mattress in its smallest form. And beyond that, the bear said, let's imagine that the mattress contemplators and the mattress itself are empty. Let's imagine our imagining is empty. Are you going to eat that, said the bear, because if you're not, I'd love to have it. Then what would there be? No mattress, no bear, no idea of mattress, no idea of bear, no bear interrupting with his stomach growling and reaching for the spoon. There'd only be luminosity, said my husband, the flashlight in my head. I'm going to read this next poem. I read this one, I think, for the first time on the Fish House website. I had just written it. And I want to just take a moment and thank Fish House again, because there's nothing out there like it, and it's just so great. And I use it all the time, actually, for my students. When we read a poem, we go to Fish House. And this is such a neat thing, so thanks. This poem was, it's completely found, which means that I didn't write any of the words, I just arranged the order. And it's taken from a hymnal book called The Hallelujah Singing School from 1858. And what I did was I went in the back, they're all devotional hymns, and I just, there was a list of first lines of all the hymns. And so that this is a collage of those. America the Hallelujah. According to thy word, affliction is a stormy deep. Again the day returns, and there is a rest. Angels roll the rock, another day is past, another 6 days' work, another year. As the heart with eager, behold a stranger, brightest and the best of bright, brother, thou art gone. Call me away, flung to the heedless, forgive my folly. From earliest dawn, from every stormy, from Greenland's icy, gently glides the stream. Gently, oh gently, give glorious things. Had not a word, happy is he who, happy the man whose. Hark, what mean these? Hear what the voice. How beautiful the sight. How blessed is every, how blessed the man. How did my heart, how precious is thee? I love the volume. I'm but a stranger, I'm but a weary. I sing the mighty, it's good to give. I waited meekly, I would not live, just as I am. Let every creature, let us with joyful, long as I live, my country tis of thee, my God how endless, my never-ceasing song, nearer my God to thee, now let me make, oh, come loud anthems, oh, I could find, oh, for a shout, oh, for a thousand, oh, happy day that, oh, happy they who, see what a living, sing hallelujah, so fades the lovely, soft be the gently, softly they rest, so let our lips, soon as I heard, the billows swell, the cloud has filled, the day is past. There is a land, ah, there is a land of, there is an hour, there is a stream, there is a world, the voice of the free. The winter is over, this is the word. Though dark and stormy, through all the changing, up to the fields, we come with joyful, welcome delightful. We sing the bright, when down our heads, when I can read, when I can trust, when our hearts are, when overwhelmed. Where shall the man, where is my heart, ye boundless realms, ye nations of thee, yes, my native land, ye sons of men with, yes, there are joys, yes, we trust the day, ye trembling captives. And I'll just finish with the prose poem, Rant. I am Nora Jesse James. I always feel slightly insane when I read this poem. Look out. I'm the real Jesse James. It took four men with big heavy hands to hold the horse down. The horse kicked its stomach, collapsed like an ironing board, and rolled over, pinning the legs of the men beneath it. One man sat on its neck while the other administered the needle, Bute and Demerol, in the night paddock. The horse's eyes were like stoplights and the headlights of the men's trucks parked in a circle around the animal. I have faced this animal in a paddock when it was too late to run. I was young, but I was no girl when my hand came down hard on the muzzle of the horse that charged, half a ton of meat and muscle thrown my way. I am the real Jesse James. I have stared down that stampede, that rage he thinks belongs only to him. I heard it took four men to hold him down when his mouth frothed and he swore and spit and bit people, had to be held down against the smashed furniture. This rumor follows him like a legend, like a bad smell, an animal that can be held down by four grown men. But what kind of animal is that? A horse that kicks its own stomach, a thought that eats away at men's guts when they are already trapped, already tamed. The one last thing she should have told him but didn't, the one time he reached for her and she turned away. I am the real Jesse James. Not the man you may have heard of, held down by four men, his friends who ran after him when he drank too much as usual and was off like a horse, out of the bar, down the street, and into the forest of buildings, the forest of his own thoughts, all the things he should have told her. Perhaps you have heard about my legend, the one that follows me like a hangover, a bad smell. It was rage that held the big animal down in the paddock, not the heavy hands of the men who pinned it there in the dirt. That wasn't a paddock, really, just the circle of their trucks parked and running. This happened when I was just a girl, so it's hard to remember. I watched as it took two of them to hold the neck down and administer the needle, Butte and Demerol. One man sat on the horse's neck and said, "This is one sick horse, fucking bastard." The men were angry, standing in front of their trucks, after chasing the horse across the field through a forest of trees, and I wasn't supposed to follow. I am the real Jesse James. I know you have heard of me. That was what I was supposed to say, the last thought before I turned my head away from him and he flew into a rage. I am the real Jesse James. But I have drunk far too much tonight, and I am just a girl. Perhaps you have heard of his legend. It took four men to hold him down in the paddock after he ran out of the bar. Four of his friends to hold him down because rumor has it that he smashed some furniture. I have seen this man naked, and I can tell you that he is no Jesse James. I am the real thing. I mean, I'm telling you the real story now, but I have drunk far too much tonight, and I am just a girl. What is known about the doctor who helped the outlaw Jesse James when he was wounded, rolling in a frothy rage, and held down by four men in a paddock? He brought his doctor's bag with him. Needles, Butte, Demerol. The doctor did not know he was helping an outlaw. When he entered the circle of trucks, the men parked with the engines running. The air smelled like horses let loose from barns. The outlaw Jesse James was a small girl held down by four men. She was in a rage, having smashed furniture and split a man's lip, kicked him in the stomach. Why had the men been holding her down, the doctor asked. Couldn't they see she was just a girl? The air smelled like outlaws, and the girl said, "I am the real Jesse James. You aren't going to tell on me, are you, Doc?" The doctor lived in a red house that burned light from the inside. When he walked out the red door, the air smelled like a legend. Somewhere out in a field, four men were holding a girl down by the legs. They were kneeling on her neck. Her eyes were stoplights in the air that smelled like the men's breath, like the inside of whiskey glasses. They said they were looking for a friend who ran away, and they talked about him as if he were some sort of outlaw, as if he were the real Jesse James. The horse, the girl said, the horse has escaped its stall, is running out in the night, has broken out of the barn. I am no girl, and I am no doctor, the doctor thought. I am a thief. I steal from medicine cabinets. The girl rides the horse to all her private robberies. Who has stolen her horse? The doctor placed a hand on the girl's neck where the boot had been. He felt a vein pulse, a red house that burned light from the inside. Isn't it always rage, the doctor thought, that makes one body hold another to the ground like some sort of legend? The men are all outlaws. They are all little girls who need to be held down and given medicine. She needed this medicine, the men told the doctor. Her mouth was a red house that burned light from the inside. I am no girl, she said. I am the real Jesse James. The men drank too much tonight and could not find their friend. The doctor placed his bag down in a circle of dirt in the air that smelled like whiskey. I am no doctor, he said. When I was a girl, my father was a doctor who lived in a house that caught fire and burned red from the inside. He was always falling asleep with a needle in his arm, burning things down. He was always running away from his four friends, those men with heavy hands, who used to chase him out of bars and down the street through a forest of buildings, his own thoughts that were filled with the smell of burnt houses, horses, and the outlaw Jesse James. That night I watched the men drive their trucks across the fields. The trucks stopped with their headlights in a circle, the engines running. I was riding my horse through the forest until he sweated with rage, his mouth foaming, his red coat burning from the inside against my legs. I was just a girl, and I was not supposed to follow the men when they drove their trucks across the field looking for my father with his doctor's bag caught in the circle of light, his eyes burning red stoplights when he said, "Where is my girl?" And the men's hands were on him. But the men were not outlaws. They held themselves down with their own hands. The doctor came with his bag and gave them clean needles. The air carried the smell of horse on its back. The men talked to each other as if they were creating a legend. Each one of them said, "I am the outlaw. I am the real thing. I am the one who ran out of the barn into the streets. And give me your hands. Go ahead. Put your hands on me. Try to hold me down now that my veins burn red from the inside. I am a horse that rolls over and pins your legs down. And what do you think I am? Do you think I'm a girl? I am no girl. Did I tell you that before she left, she let four men put their hands on her? She let them hold her down to the ground. There was a girl I loved who was a legend among her friends. They said she was prone to fly into rages and sometimes just ran out of bars and into the street. I was no doctor, but I could tell this girl needed help. Rumor has it she smashed some furniture, burned letters, split the lip of her friend, all because a man turned himself away from her at the wrong time. I loved her, yes, but there's no point in making a legend of it. Jesse James was shot by a friend in his own home, but in his photo they crossed his hands over his chest in a wrathful pose." Does anyone have any questions? Woody.
The town hall, I didn't pick it up until midway through, but am I correct that you kept the lines in alphabetical order?
I did.
Was it perfect alphabetical order, or did you...
No, I cut some out. And it really, someone pointed out to me that that was actually lazy of me, and it's true. Because, I could have tried to arrange them in different orders, but they just seem to work so perfectly in that order.
It's a nice form, sandwich.
Yeah. No, there was a lot that I skipped. I just I made a Xerox copy of it and sort of went through and crossed them out. Any other questions? Yeah?
Have you been writing poetry before? Is it something you started as a kid or something you would have started in high school or college?
I wrote this really bad poem in high school called Fences, and about how some people are on one side and other people on the other side and they can't communicate with each other. That was the only poem I wrote in high school, and it was bad. In college, I wrote fiction, and then I started taking some poetry classes at the end of my college experience. I went to Middlebury. And I think my junior year, I went to the Breadloaf Writers Conference and I applied in poetry, and that was sort of when I got to be serious, more serious as a poet. And then for my senior thesis, I thought, well, I know how to write short stories and I know how to write poems, but what's this whole narrative poem thing? That just seems so difficult. How can you write a poem that then also tells a story, like the Jesse James one? And so I decided that I was going to investigate the narrative poetry blend, and still doing it, kind of. And so I did it, my thesis on it was a bunch of narrative poems about Vermont, different characters. And then by then I just was writing poetry, and then I went to grad school, and that's sort of when it took off. Does that answer your question? I didn't really read one contemporary poet, though, until I got to grad school, which was a real shame. And it's great to have something like the Fish House where you can just click on it and hear a couple of poems. And I just was reading old dead white guy poets, Sylvia Plath. That was about it. Okay, well, thanks so much for having me.